These are the Target Files, taking a 21st century look back at the 20th century and now 21st century adventures of the Doctor in novelization and audiobook form, looking through the eyes of adulthood at our childhood memories. After all, a great Time Lord once said, "There's no point in being grown up if you can't be childish some of the time." Welcome to Doctor Who Target Files, episode 65, and this time we are discussing the sixth Doctor story, The Mark of the Rani, written by Pip and Jane Baker, and the recently released audiobook performed by Nicola Bryant. This is Mike in Swansea.
And hello, this is Alex in Exeter. So, Mike, what did you think of it all?
I'd say overall quite sort of functional, quite A to B, no real sort of deviation from the TV version. Always enjoyed the story. I think it was one I remember sitting down and watching when I was about 8 or 9 when this was on with my mum, and she was quite heavily into the steam engine revolution because my grandfather, her father, worked on the railways most of his life. So an enjoyable one. You know, I have certain criticisms with it. I have certain things I enjoyed about it. Looking forward to getting into it, really. What did you think?
It does sort of fall for a sort of formulae of, you know, from A to B, definitely. I think the audiobook's very well read by Nicholas. That's a great performance. But I do really love the episodes. I think there's some really beautiful shots in these episodes of the sort of mining village, and the score by Mark Ayres is just beautiful, I think, in some bits. So I think it's a really good thing. But like you, I have slight criticism with the book. I think it is a bit A to B, to be honest.
Yes, before we get onto the book, Al, you just mentioned the Mark Ayres soundtrack. I think that plays a huge part of what's so enjoyable about the episode. A lot of synthesizer work, and not something you'd necessarily have seen in sort of period dramas back in those days in the 80s, the BBC.
No, not really. It was sort of, I think it was quite a new invention at the Radiophonic Works at the time. It just works so well because there's some really sort of beautiful shots of the landscape and that sort of very sort of 80s synth music with it. This works really well, and this works, and I think it's evangelistic sort of outlook, you know. It's sort of, you know, this whole thing of this book, isn't it, about science over nature, I think.
Yes, got it down as man versus machine. Beginning of the Luddite era, of course, and we have a real life character in George Stephenson, inventor of the steam engine, the rocket.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting thing. I mean, a real life character, isn't it? It's trying to be like a historical Doctor Who again, but I don't know if it really works for that character, because he sort of has backstepped most of the way through. There's bits where he's important, but I don't know if it really works.
Yes, I was making notes just before, Al, and on a similar theme, I put him down as a bit of a MacGuffin for the story, really. He's there just to represent the difference between machine and man and the emergence of Luddites.
I think he's just there to sort of signify the historical bit, unfortunately. He doesn't really do much. There's bits in the way, you know, he sort of starts to do something and he's sort of paling back again, so I don't think it works or not. The problem I find with this book is you have two very big sort of villains with the, you know, the Master and the Rami, and they don't even do a great deal. There's some nice bits with them, but it's more sort of dialogue, I think.
Yeah, it's not the sort of huge amount of manic pace you'd get with a villain's team up nowadays. In the modern era of Doctor Who, you'd think of Missy, wouldn't you, and the Master?
I'll most definitely, there's that sort of feeling, you know, these days there'd be a point to them being there. And I got to the end of it, I'm thinking, well, what's the point of them being there? You know, yeah, to take over the area maybe, or to unrelease a T-Rex, maybe. Well, that's not how it really happens.
Yes, and just referring back to Stevenson again as a character, does Doctor Who need to bring these real historical figures? Does it need to bring them more layers, do you think? As we've just discussed, he is a bit one-dimensional in this story.
Yeah, I think sometimes that works if you add more layers to historical characters in Doctor Who. You know, I was thinking recently, you know, when you had Shakespeare in Doctor Who, and he wasn't just a one-dimensional character. They gave him layers, they gave him backstory. So I think historical characters that are in Doctor Who need as much backstory maybe as the Doctor. They're going to be as important maybe.
Yeah, and then I suppose another extreme is the extreme versions you get, stereotypical versions you get. I'm thinking of the Chibnall story in the new series, Dinosaurs on a Spaceship. We had Queen Nefertiti, we had the gentleman who was a famous hunter, and they were pretty much caricatures, weren't they?
Yeah, that is the other end of the spectrum, I suppose. And when you get Churchill in Doctor Who, it's always a very stereotypical version of Churchill. So I think it's a difficult balance because, you know, Doctor Who was always meant to be thought of sort of a teaching children history thing, which, you know, sort of gone away with in recent years. I think there's a feeling it might go back to that with more in the Chibnall era, I think.
Yes, we shall wait and see, Al. I think we're going to have a few historical adventures. Nothing confirmed as of yet, but from what people have noticed from filming scenes within South Africa and other places they've been, we're going to have quite a few steps back into the past, I think.
I think so. This new season, as we've seen, there's been shots done meant to be like things in America, and there's also the sort of Henry the Ape stuff coming. I think it's all going to be very interesting, I think. But I think where the historical stuff is done in this book, it's quite interesting because I doubt many people would know what I know what it is, and you probably know what the Luddites were. So it might tempt them towards doing a little bit of research and finding out what they were, maybe. So I think that's done quite nicely.
Would you like to explain how they evolved? I mean, my limited understanding is it's literally the power of machine over man, you know, not wanting to give up. Well, thinking that this hideous inventions of technology are taking the work away of man, and are you going to affect your livelihood?
Yeah, that's basically what it was against. You know, it was basically, you know, they had these magnificent, you know, big new mills over all these stuff, what they were done by hand, and also people leaving the countryside, and they decided what the only way around it was to smash up all the machinery what was coming, so they were known as the Luddites. And it's a fascinating period of time when, you know, technology these days is just seen as something. Back then, it was completely feared and thought, you know, this is something of the devil, you know, this is not real, basically. So, made a time difference, and, you know, as we've seen here, the master and the runner use it to their advantage, really.
Yeah, so we see it nowadays with, I suppose, the internet, don't we? Still relatively early in its infancy on a wide scale, social media. We see how often that's criticised, you know, sometimes for the right reasons, sometimes for not.
Oh yeah, most definitely. You know, it's still out there, sort of fear of technology, and it's called technophobia. I think it's changed from Ludditeness to technophobia these days. But it's really interesting that the sort of same issues can be still used to this day, and used against, you know, system and people, really. And that's what the master's trying to do with the sort of Luddite, and the locals who are very stereotyped.
Yes, Al, returning to the relaxed setting we mentioned before, delves its way down to the relationship between Doctor and Perry in story, because we know Colin's Doctor started this season quite violently. There's a real sort of loving bond between them again by this point in the season, isn't there?
I think the sort of development of character between the Doctor and Perry has got to that sort of I like the companion stage. When it's not as interesting as it was when he started, when it was quite violent, he didn't want to be there, you know. Regeneration had gone slightly wrong, I think, with Colin. I always think it's one of the better regenerations. It's sort of by now, it's sort of, yeah, you're my companion, I care about you, sort of stage with Perry, done by Nicola Bryant brilliantly, I think, by then.
Perhaps more sort of paternal, or maybe like an uncle and a niece.
Yeah, I would say that, you know, it's more, you know, definitely more paternal, I think. It's more, you know, I'm looking after you than trying to teach you or show you, I think.
And on the opposite side of that, we have the absolute enthusiastic crawling, shall we say, nature of the master onto the Rani.
Oh, well, most definitely. You know, the master is using the Rani to his own advantage most of the time, and then sees the only way out is by being nice to her, and he can't stand it. You know, he's always putting him down for the whole episode, really, and definitely in the book.
Yes, and the scenes within the woodland in the TV version certainly reminded me of the Master and Missy in the Capaldi finale.
Oh yeah, most definitely. I was thinking about that too. That, you know, there's a lot of that sort of, you know, you're getting in the way sort of thing, and the whole sort of landmine thing with Perry nearly ends up in reminded me a lot of that as well.
I mean, are you surprised in a way? I suppose Missy has negated the need for that, the gender change in the incarnation, but we haven't seen the Rani on TV anyway, although she has been recast for Big Finish in the last few years.
Yeah, that's I've actually got that. That's a very interesting performance by Siobhan Redman. They recast because of Kate O'Mara as the Rani, who's she's absolutely superb in this. And also, I know many people don't like the first Silver regeneration episodes. I think she's very good in that. But unfortunately, when Big Finish came to do their Rani stories, it's very good as well. They recast Siobhan Redman, who's very good at it.
Yes, and it would be good to see her in the regular series as well, you know, whether she'd play that character or not, or somebody else.
Yeah, I think it would be good to have the Rani back, because I always think there's a lot of stuff that she does sometimes better than the Master, I think. I think that, you know, we haven't seen a great deal of her, but I think we've had, maybe we don't need the Rani because we've had a female Master now, you know, play brilliantly. Well, I don't know, I think, you know, that balance back then was always great with her because he was so menacing and all that. It was really good, I think.
So, will we necessarily see more female antagonists with Jodie as the Doctor?
Wow, it's an interesting one, I think. You know, are we going to get that sort of complete balance of complete female, which would be very interesting, I think. But I think it probably won't happen because there will be too many complaints. I think it would be a good thing, but I think there'd be too many complaints from the old Whovians.
Yes, Al, we haven't really mentioned the audiobook released last month yet. What did you make of Nicola Bryant Perry herself performing this one?
Yeah, I actually really enjoyed it. I thought it was good, had a good pace, and maybe a little over-the-top sound background to it, but I thought it was very good. It's interesting to see, because, I've, you know, she spent an awful lot of time with Colin. Well, the Colin performance isn't the greatest, but it's not bad.
No, I think she does a pretty admirable job, but some of my issues are the writing is quite sort of functional and there's not a great deal of flair, I don't think, in Pip and Jane's novelisation.
No, I would agree there. It does go on a bit, you know, there's not a great deal. I think we're just used to having action all the time in the books we've done recently, and this one is fairly dry. It's quite scientific in explaining sort of weird and wonderful how time things work, really, so it does get a bit dry.
Yes, which can work on TV. As we've said, we have the Mark, I've forgotten his name now, Marquez soundtrack. We have the beautiful, beautifully well-directed look of the English countryside in Ironbridge Gorge Museum where this was filmed.
Yeah, that is absolutely, I would agree on TV, that in that first episode, I think it's like the first 5 minutes before, you know, the TARDIS appears. That those shots are stunning with that very ethereal Marquez soundtrack over it. I think it works really well to this day. You know, having got a few soundtracks recently, you think the Marquez ones are still stand up really well, I think.
Yeah, so fantastic to have had his contribution to the show over the years. And in terms of television, something which lost a bit in the novelisation, I think, was the cliffhanger. Only two episodes on TV from the 45-minute period of Classic Who. What did you make of that cliffhanger when Colin's Doctor is apparently going to end up down a mineshaft?
Well, yeah, it's a lot better on TV, you know, when you're sort of nearly falling down the mineshaft. What I felt on the audiobook, like, I thought it lost a bit of, you know, that sort of cliffhanger pace. So I thought it went on a bit and it just slightly just happened and then passed you by, unfortunately, in the audiobook.
Yes, and then we move sort of towards the ending later on in the book. What did you make of the solution? And the pretty intense scene, I thought that came across pretty well in the book as it does with the manicness at the end in the TV version aboard the, is it the Rani's TARDIS or the Master's?
I think it's the Rani's TARDIS with all those sort of things falling about her. And sort of, I thought it worked quite well on audio, actually. It's not bad on TV.
Yeah, the soundscape, not too invasive, I thought, throughout.
Yeah, it's just about right. There's all, you know, the crashing of the jars was quite nice and all that sort of stuff. But I think it sort of ran out of budget, unfortunately, in the TV episode.
And sort of there was elements of the synthesizer nature of the Air soundtrack earlier on.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's a nice. I think it's just about right in both. I think, but I think the problem is their writing gets very dry. Unfortunately, I think it takes some of the energy and pace out of it. Unfortunately.
We were able to understand pretty well the epilogue at the end, where at the beginning of the journey they want to go to Kew Gardens and they end up there afterwards in an epilogue, which wasn't on TV, and Perry starts seeing faces in the plants, or does she?
Well, yes, and it's an interesting little extra bit. We don't quite know what he's seeing there, but it might relate it to the... I remember which was the next episode after Mark of the Rani in the series.
Later on, I wasn't too sure, but it's set up, isn't it, in the text as her seeing somebody with a goatee beard, perhaps, and that sort of indicates the Master, but I don't think he appears with Perry again, does he, in the Trial of the Time Lord? She's gone by then.
I don't think so. I think this is the last one with Perry, the Master. Or, no, because the first one's with when he meets Turlough. That's the first one. I think that's the first one, isn't it?
That was Planet of Fire, and we get the...
Planet of Fire, that's the first one, isn't it? Well, I'm trying to think. I don't think she meets the Master again.
No, and we get the explanation in this book of how he survived Planet of Fire, which we didn't get on TV.
Yeah, that's a nice little extra I think we got there about how he survived that one. I think this is the only Perry Master story, I think. You know, I think she would have been interested if we had another one maybe with her.
So, covers for Mark and the Rani Owl, a hardback edition followed by a paperback. Doctor Who, sort of aqua blue Davison logo, aqua blue with the white trim. The Davison logo, the Mark of the Rani in black underneath. An issue here with the rights on the performers' faces at the time, so it's a generic old crone drawn on the front, not discernible as Kate O'Mara's Rani.
That's quite a nice one. It would be nice if we actually had the actual photo, so.
Yeah, it could do with the current incarnation being Colin as well, but for some reason, rights-wise, I think he wasn't too keen on his face being on the covers.
Knowing how fussy you can be, son, though I don't blame him if he's not making money out of them.
Yes, and you get the target symbol is all in black here rather than the red, blue and yellow trims.
It's not bad, but I think it always has to be in red, I think.
Yeah, I do like, as you mentioned before, though, Al, off recording, the Doctor Who blue trim, though. It's a lovely sort of aqua blue colour, or almost sky blue going into the sky behind, and we get the swirling vortex. The Rani's TARDIS as the cupboard that it's set up as, and the industrial stacks in the background.
Yeah, that's sort of better. That sort of, you know, tells you a bit more. I can't believe how good my memory is, because I guessed the right cover on that, what we were saying off a minute ago. But I do like the look of that. That sort of tells you a bit more about the book, I think.
Is this one you read in school, Al?
I believe it was a summer garden in one of the houses in down here. It's sort of summertime on the deck chair, I think.
Excellent, Al. And we have the CD release from last month. Everything's been brightened, really. I think it gives it more of a stylized look, really, and I think I prefer the novelization version, which was Andrew Skilleter's final work on the Target Range. Of course, a huge contributor to many great covers.
Yeah, that's also a nice cover as well. I know whatever he does is normally very sort of descriptive. I do like his covers.
So, Al, the Mark of the Rani novelisation audiobook, what score would you like to give?
Well, I think the audiobook is very well read by Nicola. It's got a good sort of, sometimes a little bit over-the-top background score. I really like the book because it's okay, but it has nice bits in it, so it's sort of not the greatest, but it's sort of, cause I think it can be a bit too scientific sometimes. The actual episodes, I think, are really good. There's some great performances by, you know, Colin Baker, Nicola, and, you know, the Master and Rani are really good. And I just love that opening. There's some really beautiful opening scenes. And it's really annoying. I couldn't find the DVD to watch it on a 4K TV, so I could see how beautiful they probably look on that. But I think I'll give the audiobook probably a 7, and the book probably the same, and just because of those beautiful scenes, I think an 8 for the actual episodes.
Yes, I think I'd go with a solid 8 throughout. I'll enjoyed this one since I was a child, enjoyed rewatching it. The audiobook doesn't really add much, as does the novelization. Nicola does a pretty sound job of it, but as we said, quite functional, not a great deal of flair, so a solid 8 throughout.
Well, that's really good. I think it's a nice book, but it maybe needs a little bit of finer tuning, I think. I love the episodes. I think it is worth a watch, basically.
Excellent. Yeah, definitely worth it. Available from all the right places now, listeners.
This is Alex Gibbons' Doctor Who News Round.
Hello there, this is Who's News with Alex, and it's May the 1st. So, first thing we need to discuss is that in America, they're going to get a 90-minute version of Genesis of the Daleks, which of course is going to be on the Blu-ray box set that is out in June. Also afterwards, with an interview with Tom Baker on the whole making of Genesis of the Daleks. Well, this is all going to be on the Blu-ray box set, what's coming out in the first week of June, which also has all the first episodes from his first season, which includes Robot, Ark in Space, Genesis of the Daleks. It's going to be very good with lots of extras. It's going to be a 90 minutes and it's going to be shown in cinemas in America, or as you say, theatres, on June the 11th. From Candy Jar Books, which is a very interesting small book company, they are releasing a 50th anniversary book of short stories about the Brigadier, as it will be his 50th anniversary this year. I expect this will also be read by Terry Molloy at some point as an audiobook. From BigFinish.com, a new short story has come out called Erasure. You can sort of get the idea where the title comes from Gary Russell. It's a Fourth Doctor and Adric story, and also has Narvin in, played by the great Sean Carson. From Torchwood, we also have Torchwood Believe, the first in a long time with the full original Torchwood cast. A sinister church is making people believe that religion is great. Contains also, as their main religious man, Arthur Darvill, and is absolutely excellent. Worth a download, or buy it on CD from BigFinish.com.
Al, recommendations from you. What have you been watching, media, music-wise, listening, being out and about? Any gigs? Any cinema visits?
No gigs this so far. I've been busy with other things. But music-wise, I have been listening to the rather interesting Sting and Shaggy complex sort of collaboration, which is very good. I've been watching the Split, which is the great Nicola Walker drama on the BBC. Woman in White's been very good, but classic period drama, lots of famous British actors in, Charles Dance being moody and great in it. I'm trying to think of the new Peter Sutherland thing I've been watching, which is sort of American thing where the president gets killed and the next person down becomes the president, basically, which is very good on Netflix.
Designated Survivor.
That's the one, Designated Survivor, and it's very well worth a watch. Peter Sutherland doing what he always does, sort of high-end 24 action. That's good. I think that's it. So, of course, I went to see Avengers.
As we both did on the Yourself at Midnight, myself on the first evening. Yeah, thoroughly enjoyable, very engrossing film. I haven't had a cinema that quiet in the last few years since probably The Force Awakens, and before that, Mad Max Fury Road.
Well, you must have got... Yeah, it was very quiet, but, you know, it's... It was quite amazing to see at like midnight so many people, all three screens at the Odeon. I went to an Exeter, were completely full, and it's like, really, it's a really difficult film because it's, I think, it's a very well put together film. I was quite concerned that all those characters, you were going to get squishiness, you were going to get overkill, and it would be really, you know, going, oh, you don't need these, but it was just so well done. I really, really can't say what happened because it would really badly spoil, and I've been not trying to do that because it's a really interesting twist at the end. What I just don't know. I know we're going to get prequels and we're going to get other films, but I just don't know how they're going to do the next big Avengers film.
Well, I think it's a turning point in the franchise, isn't it? They're moving towards the individual films of Black Panther, Doctor Strange. We have Captain Marvel, which is actually set in the 1990s, coming out this autumn. And you know, something might happen, something may have happened in this one, something might happen with more the more established characters we've seen over the last decade, but interesting times.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting because, you know, there is one final Guardian of the Galaxy film coming out in 2020, and I just don't know, I can't say, and I'm going to need to say something, then I can't say what happens, but I'm just very interested to see what happens with that film as well. It's sort of very, very interesting what Russo brothers have done with the ending of this film, and then you think, well, where can you go from there?
Yeah, speaking of which, the Who reference, pleasantly surprised with how much screen time Karen got, really, and quite a pivotal role.
Oh, yeah, very pivotal. And apparently, you know, the rumour mill that's going around in the next film, which has a very interesting... Well, the rumour title is it's going to be called Endgame, apparently. So he's meant to have... You know, if you look at the way the character Nebula has in the actual graphic novel of the Eternity things, he has an awful big role to play.
Excellent. So great for her to now have been in a film with one of the biggest openings of all time, I think. Or I think it has actually been confirmed now. It's past The Force Awakens, hasn't it?
Yeah, it sliced in one weekend. It basically annihilated The Force Awakens. I think it's on 400 million or something stupid like that. And that was by Monday. It came out on Thursday, and it was Monday it hit that, I think.
I could be annoyed about that as more of a Star Wars fan, but at least it wasn't Harry Potter.
No, I think the problem is what, you know, the last Star Wars film was good, but also not good. You know, there's a lot of people who weren't happy, and it's sort of, I'd be very interested to see how close Solo gets to those sort of money figures when it comes out.
Yeah, seeing the trailer for that on the big screen for the first time, it just completely whets my appetite now. I really can't wait till I see.
Well, I saw that on the greatest screen, but on a big screen, and it did really run. Yeah, I want to see that even more now. Because it's sort of one of those films when it was sort of, you know, all the sort of directorial problems, it was like, ooh, is this going to be any good? And now I've seen it on a fairly good size screen. It looks good. And I think that'll probably be the next midnight screening, I think.
Yes, and I think he's let slip now, Alden Ehrenreich, that he's going to be appearing in 3 Star Wars films, so we shall see whether it's going to be a sequel to Solo or perhaps a spin-off for Boba Fett or another character.
Well, I know, because there's so many different spin-offs meant to be happening. I know what apparently the Obi-Wan Kenobi with Ewan McGregor, which is meant to be happening, is the next one I think they're doing after Solo, I think. There must be some sort of connection, maybe.
Yeah, well, those two, you know, never really met, did they? As far as we know, Mos Eisley is the first time.
As far as we know. It's like, so what else have you been watching, Mike?
I'm rewatching the Karate Kid films because I've done a new YouTube Red series where Daniel LaRusso, Ralph Macchio, and William Zabka, who played Johnny in the movie, are coming back as middle-aged men for a 10-part YouTube-only series, comedy-based, apparently, called Cobra Kai, after the famous karate school in those movies. So I'm really looking forward to that. It's being released, the first episode, tomorrow, I think, the 2nd of May.
Oh, I'll have to have a look at that. That'll be quite fun. I always like those films as well.
Not sure how to watch it in the UK, though, because I don't think you can get YouTube Red over here. It's only advertised in the US and Australia. So we'll have to see if Netflix pick it up or Amazon.
We can hope when Netflix pick it up. It's sort of, yeah, it's very interesting with all our streaming things. I think, I heard a rumour yesterday that Netflix are being brought out by a mammoth film studio in America, apparently.
Do we know which one?
Nothing. Yeah, I haven't heard anything. It was like a rumor I heard yesterday. What, it was maybe 20th Century Fox.
Yes, because they're putting so much money now into their own films, aren't they? And you know, Steven Spielberg unfortunately dismissed it lately, saying that Netflix films shouldn't be allowed into film competitions. You know, which I thought was pretty unfair for a man I've seen as a legend. I didn't agree with what he said there.
No, because I know they boycott. I think they boycotted Cannes because of that reason, but. I think they're slowly getting there. Mudbound was probably the better one out of the couple they've done so far.
Yes, and I want to mention as well, a lad I was in school with, Jamie Jones, just directed his first movie feature based around the London riots called Obey. It actually won an award at the prestigious Tribeca Film Festival in New York last weekend for Best Cinematography. I can't remember the gentleman's name, but Jamie's the director and his cinematographer won the award for Best Cinematography, so well done to him. And also in competition there was Karen Gillan's debut feature, The Party's Just Beginning.
No, I was going to ask you about that, because where on earth can... Has that actually come out yet? Or is it coming out soon? I've been trying to see if it was out yet. I don't think it's going to go straight... It'll probably go straight to Art House in the
market. Yeah, mate, I was going to say it's probably more of an Art House release, so it may get a limited release, yeah.
I know it's had problems because of the whole name, because he wanted to call it Tupperware originally, and because that's a trade name.
It is a brand name, isn't it? Yeah, brand or trade name. So that was hugely interesting, really. And otherwise, Al... going to call myself a bit of a TV Luddite, really. I'd never seen Breaking Bad before, but I've caught up with 4 seasons now on Netflix and absolutely loving it. Can't wait to see what happens in the end. No spoilers from 5 years ago, please, folks.
I'm afraid I'm going to have to tell you what. I've never seen Breaking Bad due to the fact there was no blooming audio description on it, and I still think there's none on Netflix. That's why I know everybody goes, oh, it's brilliant, it's fantastic. I know Bryan Cranston, whatever he does, is brilliant, amazing in, but it's just like... No audio description means I haven't actually got an hour visual, it probably is.
Yeah, but you know, it's just so well acted as well. The scripts are very good. People criticised it in the later series for being a bit more like a soap opera, but it's just so damn enjoyable. It keeps you addicted like the crystal meth in the show, probably.
Oh, yes, it's a good binge, I know. I have to admit, two films I'm looking forward to seeing in 4K, because they're coming out on discs, is... bringing out The Matrix and Gladiator, I think, are coming out this month in 4K. And they're going to be interesting to see how they come out in more detail.
Yeah, lovely, shiny and bright. And on the Amazon service, included with Prime, is spin-off show Fear the Walking Dead. And I've got up to season 2 with that now. It's quite slow-paced, but we're having a bit of a crossover with a character, Morgan, who's come in for season 4 now. So I'm really watching it so we can get up to speed with him, a great actor called Lenny James, a British actor.
Oh, is he in The Walking Dead as well now, is he?
Yeah, he's been in for years. A character called Morgan, he was in the very first series, might have been the first episode.
I probably saw him, because he's an absolutely stunning actor and has done lots of things over here. So, I think he just did that very good crime drama on Sky Atlantic, which I didn't see.
Save Me or something?
Everybody raved about.
Was it called Save Me or something?
Yeah, I think it was something like that. It had the TARDIS woman in it, as I like to call her.
Saran Jones, Idris.
Saran Jones. I haven't heard of it. It was meant to be excellent. Everybody raved about how good it was.
No, Lenny James was in the very first episode or series of The Walking Dead in 2010, I think it was. And he returned a few seasons ago, but he's just left again at the end of season 8, I think we're on now, season 9 of The Walking Dead.
Season 8. When's, are you going to stick for season 9?
Didn't say I would, but I'll probably get dragged in.
You'll go back. I know what you're like. You'll go back for season 9. Next time on The Tiger Files, we will be discussing the greatest show in the galaxy, written by Stephen Wyatt, and the audiobook read by Sophie Alfred. You can, of course, contact us on Twitter at DWTargetFiles, and of course, you can always comment on our Facebook page. Of course, thanks for listening. Any comments are always welcome, and enjoy.
Doctor Who Target Files, The Mark of the Rani Review, featured Michael Winks and Alexander Gibbons. 12th Doctor Theme, composed originally by Murray Gold. Version for the podcast by Vale Mystery. Please do check out their YouTube channel, VAYLE Mystery. News Round, opening and closing themes, composed originally by Ted Heath and his orchestra, and by John Baker. Doctor Who Target Files, The Mark of the Rani Review, was recorded in Swansea, Wales, UK, and Exeter, Devon, England, UK, during May 2018.